her campaign promises led us to believe that she would do everything she could to protect our river and to protect our people.
Opponents of a proposed gold mine in western Alaska sound off about Congresswoman Peltola's flip to supporting it. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, April 24th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, lawmakers ask for time to correct a correspondence school provision ruled unconstitutional.
To come up with some resolutions so we don't pull the rug out from under those people.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly. Congresswoman Mary Peltola has joined Alaska's U.S. senators on a legal brief in support of the proposed Donlin Creek mine in Peltola's home region of the Kuskokwim River. It's a reversal for Peltola, a Democrat who was against the mine during her fish-focused campaign 2 years ago. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports.
Tribal and subsistence advocates in Bethel are stunned that Peltola would come out in favor of the mine. Sophie Swope is executive director of a Bethel-based tribal coalition called Mother Kuskokwim. She says she's heartbroken.
I do feel slightly betrayed right now. My heart's like, I don't think I've felt this heavy in a little while.
This is Peltola's second reversal on Donlin. She was the community manager for Donlin Gold for 6 years, the face of the project in Bethel and surrounding villages. But in 2014, a dam at a British Columbia mine burst, sending millions of gallons of contaminated material into lakes and rivers. Peltola quit Donlin Gold and became a fish advocate. Her campaign staff told reporters in 2022 that the BC mine disaster was her turning point.
And so you guys ready? Are your thumbs ready? Okay.
This is from a candidate forum 2 years ago at the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce.
Do you support the Donlin Gold Project?
Peltola gave it a thumbs down then, but in the amicus, or friend of the court, brief filed this week, Peltola and the U.S. senators said the mine would be, quote, an economic engine for the region and provide significant employment opportunities in one of the most impoverished regions of Alaska, unquote. Donlin would be one of the world's largest open-pit gold mines. It's projected to yield 1 million ounces of gold a year and be productive for 27 years. Among its components is a 470-foot-high tailings dam to hold back chemical-laced mining byproducts. Six tribes in the region filed a lawsuit last year claiming the environmental studies underpinning federal permission for the mine were inadequate. Donlin maintains that its dam would be safe and says it's committed to sustainability. Here's a promotional video.
Donlin is working to advance our mining project at the invitation of the Alaska Native corporations that own the land. Preservation of subsistence ways of life and providing meaningful benefits to the Alaska Native people of the Yukon-Kuskokwim region are the top priorities for Donlin Gold.
The project would create hundreds of jobs, and organizations in the region are split. Calista, the Delta's for-profit regional corporation, owns the subsurface rights and puts its political weight behind the project. The Association of Village Council Presidents, representing 56 tribes in the same area, opposes the mine. Word that Peltola was considering adding her name to the pro-Donlin brief has alarmed mine opponents in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta for days. Gloria Simeon was part of a contingent from the Bethel region that flew to Washington, D.C. last week, hoping to persuade Peltola not to sign with the mine. Simeon was disappointed in her congresswoman.
Because her campaign promises led us to believe that she would do everything she could to protect our river and to protect our people and our salmon.
Peltola's office hasn't released a statement yet to explain her change of position, and she did not make herself available for an interview. Reporting from Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin.
The Alaska House of Representatives is weighing in on a court decision that threatens key elements of the state's homeschool system. An Anchorage Superior Court judge ruled earlier this month a law authorizing cash payments to homeschool parents to spend on private or religious schooling violates the state constitution. The judge called on lawmakers to draft a legislative fix. The two-page Sense of the House, approved by a 20-18 vote today, directs the legislature's lawyers to file a brief supporting a stay of the judge's ruling through the end of June 2025. Representative Craig Johnson, an Anchorage Republican who sponsored the measure, says that's an effort to give lawmakers some breathing room.
This is simply asking the court for that time. It says, please give us time to inform those 29 or 22,000 students, those 261 teachers, to come up with some resolution so we don't pull the rug out from under those people.
The plaintiffs have also requested that the decision be put on hold, but only until the end of this June. Members of the House's predominantly Democratic and Independent Minority Caucus spoke out against the longer stay. Sitka Independent Representative Rebecca Himshut cited a memo from the legislature's lawyers saying the State Board of Education is able to issue regulations that preserve the homeschool system while complying with the court decision.
I would submit to this body that we have recourse right now to stabilize the system. We do not need another year. A stay until the end of this fiscal year would help a whole lot, but we can take action right now. Not us, the legislature, but bodies within this state have the power to actually resolve this issue right now for the coming school year.
Minority members argue a longer stay would allow unconstitutional spending to continue unabated. Representative Bryce Edgman, a Dillingham Independent who caucuses with the Republican-led majority, voted against the measure. Edgman says he doesn't want the legislature to delay a fix.
I don't want to see this go towards the end of next session. I want to deal with this issue in a prudent manner, in a prudent period of time. That's not what this Sense of the House represents.
Parties in the lawsuit are due to submit briefs on a stay by Friday. A ruling on whether the judge's decision should be put on hold is expected next week. State representatives are also considering a bill that would require adult websites to verify users are 18 or older. The bill would require sites that, as the bill puts it, contain a substantial portion of pornography to use a commercially reasonable age verification method. Similar bills have passed in more than a dozen other states. Homer Republican Representative Sarah Vance is sponsoring the effort in the Alaska House.
So this is simply trying to safeguard our children, because we do know that pornography is used as a grooming tool by predators on our children, and that's what I'm seeking to prevent.
Advocates say children are accessing adult content in their early years, sometimes unintentionally. In a 2014 study of adult men who had watched pornography in the last 6 months, the average age at which participants had first viewed adult content was around 12. And Vance says electronic age verification is a reasonable restriction, no different than showing your ID at a liquor store. But opponents say keeping minors from accessing inappropriate content isn't so simple. Mike Stabile is with the Free Speech Coalition, a California-based adult content industry group lobbying against the bill.
There's no value in having minors come to our site. It is a detriment to our site, both ethically and financially, right? There's no value in this. But the legislation that's been drafted is drafted with magical thinking. It's not the way that consumers work, and it's not the way that websites work.
For one thing, Stabile says age verification is ineffective. He says the practice pushes users to sites based overseas that don't have to comply with the law or numerous other laws and regulations aimed at safeguarding performers and consumers. The Alaska Age Verification Bill is due for amendments and a final House vote in the coming days. If passed, it'll head to the Senate. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, school district administrators react to the release of statewide testing data.
The biggest thing that when you're looking at these types of assessments is it's holding our schools accountable to ensure that they are teaching the standards set forth.
That's ahead. Stay with us. Federal officials say the pilots of a cargo plane carrying thousands of gallons of fuel reported a fire aboard the plane yesterday just before the crash near Fairbanks that killed them. Clint Johnson with the National Transportation Safety Board says the Douglas C-54, a variant of the DC-4, was headed from Fairbanks to Kobuk, carrying about 4,500 gallons of fuel oil and aviation gas. He says the two pilots with Alaska Air Fuel reported the fire in recorded radio calls to air traffic controllers just minutes after takeoff.
They weren't specific as far as where that fire was. They just said they had a fire on board, They needed to return immediately to Fairbanks International. And shortly thereafter, we lost all ADS-B, radar, and also radio communications from the accident airplane.
Officials have not yet identified the two people killed, and they say the cause of the fire and the crash remains under investigation. Johnson says NTSB investigators are speaking with witnesses who reported seeing one of the plane's four engines on fire, as well as with other pilots in the area. He says the crash site along the Tanana River is challenging, with spring breakup set to start in days.
This airplane crashed on a bluff, downhill on a bluff. Once the impact took place, a lot of the wreckage, or some of the wreckage, ended up ending up in the river and on top of the rotten, frozen ice.
Alaska state troopers say searchers were still recovering the pilot's remains today. State wildland firefighters were able to prevent flames from spreading to nearby trees Tuesday. Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation staff say they're still evaluating the crash site for the extent of any spill from the plane's cargo. Just over 30% of students across Alaska are considered proficient in reading and math, according to testing data just released by the state. But administrators say the 2023 data is not helpful for making instructional choices because districts will need another year of testing data before they have a baseline. KDLL's Riley Board has more.
On the English language arts and math tests administered to students in grades 3 through 9, about 32% of students statewide are considered proficient in English, and about 33% are proficient in math. AK Star testing, as it's known, rolled out in 2022. Last year's results were similar, with state education officials pointing to significant learning loss during the pandemic to explain the low scores. This year, the state lowered the bar for what's considered proficient, citing nationally high standards. The Kenai Peninsula Borough School District's scores fall about 5% above the statewide average in both reading and math.
So we scored about where we always do, and we're above the state average.
The district's assistant superintendent, Carrie Dendurant, says she wasn't surprised.
But I think the biggest thing is you've got other people that are saying, well, that's not good enough based on where Alaska sits. But then when you look at where the standards are and where the rubrics are, according to what I have heard, I have not done the research. People are saying we have the highest expectations and standards across, you know, the nation. But I can't say one way or another. We just need to continue focusing on what it is that we're doing and ensuring that our students are continuing to make growth.
Dendurant says the district hasn't yet had a discussion about the scores, but she says they're not that useful yet because the AK Star exam has been undergoing small tweaks and changes in its inaugural years. She says the next set of scores are likely to come out in the fall. After that, districts will have 2 years of baseline data from an unchanged test that they can use to drive instructional choices.
We're hoping that with the results that we're going to be receiving in the fall timeframe, that that's going to help us as we're preparing. But the biggest thing that when you're looking at these type of assessments is it's holding our schools accountable to ensure that they are teaching the standards set forth by the state of Alaska.
Dendurant says that data will be used to help the district align with its strategic plan, one goal of which is performance on standardized tests. But she cautions that the test is just a snapshot of one day in a student's life, and only a picture of certain students. In the Kenai District, that was about 85% of students in grades 3 through 9.
It's a snapshot. It helps us, but we're really looking forward to getting our 2024 results with limited to no changes, and that we can use that as our baseline for growth to tie it in for our instructional planning for the upcoming years.
The state's education department did not respond to an interview request. In a press release, the department said it was pleased to see a slight increase in participation across all student groups and looking forward to providing districts with baseline data next year. In Kenai, I'm Riley Board.
Ballots will be mailed and voting will begin in Anchorage's mayoral runoff election next week. The contest is between frontrunner and former Anchorage Assembly Chair Suzanne LaFrance and incumbent Mayor Dave Bronson. Alaska Public Media's Jeremy Shea reports that Bronson is facing an uphill battle.
We got a lot of doors to knock. We got a lot of calls to make, texts to send, postcards to write. and votes to win over.
That's Suzanne LaFrance addressing about 40 supporters and volunteers at a campaign event at an Anchorage labor union hall. She counts a lot of labor interests among her endorsements.
I'm excited about working with you all to build a better future for our community, and I'm ready to get to work.
LaFrance has outperformed Bronson, who's seeking a second term as mayor of Alaska's biggest city, in campaign fundraising, the regular election results, and a post-election poll. Her lead in the regular election wasn't huge, just 473 votes, which is less than 1%. But it was a crowded ballot, and a few days after the regular election, Alaska Survey Research polled 1,408 Anchorage adults and found that among the likely voters in an either-or runoff, LaFrance led Bronson about 56% to 44%. And that was before the third-place finisher in the regular election, Bill Popp, endorsed LaFrance. Popp got nearly 17% of the vote. Neither campaign would share much about their strategy to win the runoff. Here's LaFrance.
There's targeting and there's strategy, and you know we'll be focusing on our efforts on those folks who are likely to be supportive.
The Bronson campaign would not comment on the poll or address questions about its path to victory for this story. In a text message, campaign manager Blake Stearin said, quote, "While LaFrance and friends are measuring the drapes, the Bronson campaign is working hard to earn votes. We don't have any comment beyond that," end quote. Since its second-place finish in the regular election, the Bronson campaign appears to be ramping up its advertising around one specific theme.
This election is about balance.
Balanced government that represents and respects both sides of the political spectrum.
And balance against single-party rule in the Anchorage Assembly.
I stand for balance, and I think most Anchorage residents do too. I'm Dave Bronson, and I'd be honored to have your vote.
Paid for by Bronson. The city's elections are nonpartisan, but 9 out of 12 current assembly members identify as Democrats or politically left of center. LaFrance is a nonpartisan, endorsed by the local chapter of the Alaska Democratic Party. Bronson and a few members who often align with him on controversial issues are Republicans or conservatives. The Democrats also endorsed the fourth place candidate for mayor, Chris Tuck. Tuck says he's holding off on an endorsement. He's watching the campaigns for what he says Anchorage needs, civility. Some of his supporters have alleged that some LaFrance supporters have tried to bully or intimidate his backers. Tuck doesn't think his voters will fall cleanly into the Bronson or LaFrance camps for the runoff.
Man, that's a really tough one due to the fact that I had a lot of people that voted for Bronson originally that ended up voting for me this last time around. I think it's pretty well split.
Bronson is Anchorage's ninth elected mayor since the city and borough unified in 1975. So far, only one has failed to win a second term. That was George Wirch, who, like Bronson, is a Republican. He lost to Mark Begich in 2003, who, like LaFrance, was a liberal challenger and was also a former Anchorage Assembly chair at the time. This cycle, Wirch has endorsed Bronson. In Anchorage, I'm Jeremy Shea.
The U.S. Secretary of Commerce has approved a federal disaster declaration for the Kuskokwim River because of the failure of multiple salmon fisheries in 2022. Governor Mike Dunleavy requested a disaster declaration from the feds for 2022 Chinook, Chum, and Coho fisheries on the Kuskokwim after the fisheries experienced a 100% loss in commercial revenue and significant economic and cultural losses due to a depressed subsistence fishery. The declaration makes the fisheries eligible for a yet-to-be-determined amount of disaster assistance. It also could allow tribal organizations and businesses to access loans or other federal funding programs to recoup losses because of the fisheries' failures. NOAA Fisheries announced that the 2022 Kuskokwim fisheries disaster was approved alongside two other fisheries disasters, one for Chum and Coho fisheries in Puget Sound in 2021, and another for Upper Cook Inlet salmon set net fisheries in 2021 and 2022. The declaration is one of a series of recent disaster determinations for fisheries on the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. The federal government has declared disasters for 2020 and 2021 fisheries on both the Yukon and Kuskokwim rivers. Alaska aviator Orrin Siebert died Friday at age 87. Siebert was best known as the founder of regional airline Peninsula Airways. He started the airline in 1955, just after graduating high school in the tiny southwest Alaska town of Pilot Point. Penn Air went on to become Alaska's largest regional airline before it filed for bankruptcy. KUCB's Theo Greenlee reports that in the Aleutians, where Siebert made his career, he was best known as the man with the goose.
Dutch Harbor was a little different 25 years ago. The Elbow Room was still known as one of the most dangerous bars in the country. The Crab Derby was roaring. And if you were flying to the mountainous coastal villages up and down the chain, there was only one way to get there, the Grumman Goose.
The Grumman Goose here. This airplane was designed in 1936.
That's Orrin Siebert during a 1999 interview with the local TV station in Unalaska Dutch Harbor. The electronic music fits the video perfectly. Siebert wears a black and red bomber jacket and aviator shades as he stands in front of the candy blue and yellow striped seaplane.
It's a flying boat. The hull is actually a boat.
Siebert's the man responsible for bringing the amphibious aircraft to Dutch in the 60s. He recognized that the rowdy fishing community needed a special kind of aircraft to handle the rugged conditions, and the Goose was just the thing.
I made my first trip to Dutch Harbor here in 1963, and I've been flying out here continuously since then. And we have communities like Akatan, 40 miles from here, which is extremely mountainous. They'll never be able to build a runway there.
In 1955, Siebert graduated high school and started flying right away, chartering locals from remote communities to access healthcare facilities. He says business rapidly grew from there.
Hi, everyone. I'm Susan Ruffrano for Channel 8, and we're about ready to board the Goose, the Penn Air Goose, and we're going to Accutan. We'll see you on board.
Siebert led Penn Air to become the largest regional airline in Alaska, operating more than 30 aircraft in 45 communities. Then, in 2012, Penn Air took the step of expanding to the lower 48. But just a few years later, the company filed for bankruptcy and finally sold its assets in 2020. The Goose doesn't fly in the Aleutians anymore, but there was a time when Dutch Harbor and the Grumman Goose were almost synonymous. Siebert was inducted into the Alaska Aviation Hall of Fame and was also the recipient of the Wright Brothers Master Pilot Award during his long career. And he was one of the most accomplished Grumman Goose pilots, clocking in over 10,000 hours, according to family members. Siebert died of natural causes on Friday in Anchorage. He is survived by 6 children and more than 50 grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and great-great-grandchildren.
And so I'm kind of proud of those accomplishments.
In Unalaska, Dutch Harbor, I'm Theo Greenlee.
Springtime in Homer is marked by the return of sandhill cranes and various shorebirds. This year, a local dance school is bringing even more birds to the city with a production of Swan Lake. KBBI's Jamie Deep has more on the upcoming performances.
The classic ballet production with music by Russian composer Pyotr Ilyich Tchaikovsky follows the story of Odette, a young woman cursed to become a swan who falls in love with a prince. Homer-based studio Motivity Dance School is putting the dance together and features cast members as young as 5 years old. Breezy Berryman founded the school and is a co-choreographer for the show. She says they plan to have it at the same time as the Kachemak Bay Shorebird Festival, but the timing didn't work out. So she says they pressed on to produce the show.
We decided, let's go for it and do a big production of Swan Lake. We had done Alice in Wonderland last year at the theater, so thought it'd be fun to do another spring ballet and something birds felt very springish.
Swan Lake is traditionally a large production with more than 120 dancers, but the school is putting things together with fewer than 40 dancers. They will keep the main characters like evil magician Von Rothbart. The school will even have a professional dancer from the Oregon Ballet Theater as the male lead, Prince Siegfried. Allison Arima is the other choreographer for the production and will star as Odette. She says there are some challenges to having a smaller cast.
It's going to be a lot more movement trying to fill a space and fill it with character, but I think these girls have worked very hard, and I think they will fill that space beautifully.
Berryman and Arima also shortened the program and made some changes to the ending. Instead of the original three-act ballet, the show was cut to two acts and is roughly half the original runtime. It also includes dances with birds from other well-known ballets, such as Sleeping Beauty and The Firebird. Arima and Berryman say they are also changing the ending, which usually ends with the lead characters dying.
It's a very tragic ending a lot of times. There are other ballet companies that have made this a happier ending. That has to do with Rothbart meeting some demise, but we'll keep our ending a secret for the time being.
It's not quite as tragic.
The school will have three shows from April 26th to 28th at the Mariner Theater. In Homer, I'm Jamie Deep.
That's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin, Chris Clint and Jeremy Shea in Anchorage, Eric Stone in Juneau, Riley Board in Kenai, Sage Smiley in Bethel, Theo Greenlee in Unalaska, and Jamie Deep in Homer. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.